when the president talked about government reorganization, your first thoughts were?
I've seen the movie before. Because this really isn't a new issue or a new strategy. And, I mean, if you look all through the last century, most American presidents have tried to use structural reorganization in one way or another.
And how effective is that? Well, first off, were they able to really change things? This is a big ship to try and turn.
Let me respond to that question by quoting a long-term OMB, BOB staffer, Harold Seidman, who wrote a book on federal organizations. And let me just quote a little bit of it.
He said,
reorganization has almost become a religion in Washington. Opposition to reorganization is evil. The myth persists that we can resolve deep-seated issues of substance by reorganizing. The devils to be exorcised are overlapping and duplication and in confused or broken lines of authority and responsibility. So when I listened to President Obama's speech, I thought he had joined the reorganization religion.
and so this is sometimes easier said than done.
It's always easier said than done.
What are the challenges? Why is this so hard?
Well, there are lots and lots of them, but let me just try to describe a few of them. First, the major issue and what I would consider the most enduring issue is whether the president and the executive branch actually have the authority on their own to do a reorganization. And we have to ask the question, what's the role of the Congress in this effort? So this isn't just an issue that's of interest to students of political structures, because it really goes to the heart of the U.S. system. And, you know, the American system is designed not to be efficient. And the shared powers between the Congress and the White House include the reorganization authority.
And part of this, of course, is we always talk about streamline, but and I just take DHS. I know DHS has like 46 different congressional overseers, which on the face of it doesn't seem very, very efficient, doesn't seem very streamlined. So it seems difficult to get Congress to change agencies to be more efficient if they're not very efficient themselves.
Well, let me say a little bit about that. You know, historically, Congress was the first body that was interested in reorganization. And yet, when the White House, you know, started to become more concerned about management, it sort of collided with congressional interests. And Congress has really been unwilling to give the White House reorganization authority without controls. What Congress thinks of as overlap, duplication, and lack of coordination is not always the same thing that the White House did. And your description of the congressional structure indicates that. But that's not an accident. We have designed a system that is full of opportunities for one branch to really stop the other. Or in the case of Congress, we have two chambers. We have both authorizing and appropriating committees and subcommittees. So it is designed to act that way. So, we shouldn't be surprised that all of this occurs.
So if you had the ear of the president, what would you be advising in terms of approaching a let me ask a question first. I think it's sort of almost become a truism that everyone says, okay, we ought to, it's not as efficient as it should be more streamlined. Is that true?
Well, I guess I would go back one step and say that I think that the president needs to think about what it is to argue only for efficiency. And, you know, that the experience of most of the modern reorganizations that we've had has been they've argued that reorganization will lead to cost savings. And, you know, and those are very attractive arguments in tough budget times like the one we have right now. But there is almost no evidence that reorganizations lead to cost savings.
Hmm.
And in fact, there are some people that argue that the disruption that occurs at the beginning of a reorganization can be costly in money as well as time.
And DHS being a fairly good example
yeah.
of that, it's taken DHS several years to sort of get its sea legs.
Well, it doesn't, first of all, I think it's decided it can't go to sea. It's not a ship.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took many, many years. So the Defense Department, which was really the last massive reorganization that we had. But, you know, one of the things that has really concerned me, and I think it's what is really behind Obama's comment during the State of the Union, is that people think that consolidation can lead to more effective programs. So it's not just really about efficiency. But effectiveness also is problematic because, you know, it's really, it's extremely difficult to determine what criteria that you will use as the basis for identifying elements that should go into a new organizational structure. I mean, the salmon example that...
Yes, the infamous salmon.
Yeah. So the question is, should we put all of the programs and policies that deal with salmon in one organization structure? But then you have to start to ask the question, does it make sense to think about organizations that deal with all fish together, or should we be concerned about organizations that deal with elements that live in freshwater? And often the policies that deal with salmon have conflicting priorities. Some are trying to preserve fish, some are trying to sell them, some of them are trying to, you know, really develop some scientific issues. And, you know, it's not just in salmon. In the past, there were concerns about putting programs for the elderly all together, whether they are in health, housing, income maintenance, and social services. But in both cases, what you see is that programs often have their feet in multiple policy areas. Just because they're all salmon or they're all elderly doesn't mean they don't have more in common with other aspects of the, you know, the policy framework.
So I go back to the question that I was going to ask earlier was, how do you approach this? Should we be reorganizing? What should the Obama administration be doing?
Well, first of all, I think we have to start with the assumption that this is a society that has a lot of ambivalence about what government should do.
And that seems to be the question that we keep fighting probably for three decades now.
I think we have fought for two centuries.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, that's really the way I sort of think about it is that we have a society which on one hand is very pessimistic about government and thinks that the private sector can always do things better than the public sector. But then on the other hand, when something occurs, we have a lot of optimism about what government can do. And so we go back and forth between these two, and we're trying to live with really conflicting views. So I think you have to start from there. And we also have to acknowledge that really one of the main obstacles to moving forward in some areas has to do with the groups that are in the broader society that are a part of our governance structure. And that means And it's usually, we usually hear from them in the congressional processes, where, you know, interest groups, states and localities, third party providers are the ones that provide the information to the members of Congress.
Does this era of deficits, does this era of the age of austerity, which, I mean, deficits that are really remarkable to almost everybody these days, and my sense is that we're talking about even entitlements in a way that we weren't even doing a couple years ago. Is that a game changer? Does that maybe change how we have looked at reorganizations, government reorganizations, maybe make this more possible, maybe be a game changer?
Well, I think it certainly puts the issue of reorganization on the agenda, but it doesn't really avoid the fact that different actors in our society have very different views about values and what should be done. In the book that I did with Josh Channon, this a reader actually, one of the examples we used was the proposal to create a Department of Food Safety. And that would, you know, try to pull together all of the agencies that have a concern about food.
Right.
But first of all, each of these agencies has its own interest groups, its committees and subcommittees, and they operate from very different policy frameworks. So some of them are focusing on science, some of them on food production, some on regulation, and, you know, and those three, and there are probably others as well, are legitimate ways of looking at food safety, but they are usually in conflict with one another.
Mm.
So, you know, as when I said I've seen the movie before, you really do see these same issues being played out over and over again. Now, I think there are some other reasons besides efficiency, which is what usually the rhetoric is about, why we keep pushing reorganization on the agenda. Is it useful for me to talk about a couple of them?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay. The first is that reorganization is often used as a way to develop what I would consider an alternative path for policy change, because it seems often that reorganization issues are less volatile than clear-cut policy change. That doesn't always happen, but it's kind of a way of circumventing what people, when you don't think you have either the authority or the support for overt policy change. And so the reorganization kind of becomes a symbol.
And it's almost an attempt, rather than dealing with the issue head on, this is almost a way of dealing with it through a back way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, another way that reorganization is of so much interest, that it's a way to respond to public demands for change. And you mentioned the Department of Homeland Security, and that's a very good example of that. You know, after 9/11, and when Congress was devising its proposal to create a Department of Homeland Security, and Bush was actually opposing it, he decided to preempt Congress and to develop a proposal that he could support. So it was very, very much of a almost a PR approach.
Your overall take on, and we said this is going to be hard, is it your sense that this will be something that, I mean, they put Jeffrey Zients in charge, the number two guy at OMB, who has a lot of private sector experience. I mean, it sounds like if you're a betting person, don't expect huge changes.
Well, I think that would be a legitimate, but you know, the way that Josh Channon and I tried to think about this in the book is that we argued that it makes more sense to think about reorganization as a policy tool, not just as a management tool. And I mean, Jeffrey Zients comes in with management experience.
Yeah.
He doesn't really, he has knowledge of a number of policy areas, but that's, he's not a policy wonk. And so what we would see is that the particular configurations of a reorganization must emerge from the specifics of a policy area, not from some general principles of good management that lead to what I always call a one-size-fits-all approach. Now, you know, in the private sector, they have a clear goal, which is profit.
Right.
But many federal programs don't have single clear goals. And so that agencies have to, who are implementing those programs, have to balance conflicting goals and approaches. And so that doesn't make it easy to design an agency that satisfies many legitimate players in the policy process. And at the same time, produces what people in the press or people in the general population think is efficient behavior.